Behavioral Health Integrations podcast strives to inspire the next generation of mental health and addiction specialists. Our aim is to continue to raise awareness and encourage collaboration in the mental health and addiction industry so that it will continue to thrive. There are numerous approaches to treating mental health and substance abuse issues. On this show, we take pleasure in showcasing the diversity of these approaches used to improve the lives of others. So without further ado, your host, Jacob Minnig.
What is up, everyone? My name is Jacob Minnig, host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today, I have two very special guests. First, we got returning special guest, Richard O'Bannon. Richard, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too, Jake.
And then we have first-time special guest, Shannon Duncan. Shannon, it's very nice to meet you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on.
And just to let everyone know, Shannon's the author of the novel Coming Full Circle, Healing Trauma Using Psychedelics. And again, it's such a blessing having you two gentlemen on the show today to again talk about the world of psychedelic therapy, what good it does for the human race, our culture, our community. And I know as an audience, we're going to get so much out of this show. So again, it's a true blessing having you two gentlemen on.
Well, thanks for having us.
Yep. Thanks, Jake.
So Shannon, would you like to tell us more about yourself since you're, again, your first-time guest and your story and how you got into this field?
Well, that's a broad question. Are you asking me perhaps what brought me around to writing this book?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's a little more narrowly defined question I can answer for you. You know, I struggled my whole life with what I didn't know was, until much later, what I didn't know was symptoms of complex PTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder. For those that don't know, you know, PTSD is usually caused by a single big traumatic event or a few events close together, whereas complex PTSD has very similar symptoms, but it's caused by lots of abuse over time, be that childhood abuse or spousal abuse or just being in traumatic events like people in prison very often get complex PTSD. And so I struggled with symptoms of depression, overwhelm. Life was just really a struggle for me. And I tried a lot of different ways to address it once I was self-aware enough to know what a maniac I'd become. You know, I got myself into therapy. I started doing a lot of body-centered therapy. I started exploring psychedelics. All of that over the years through lots of ups and downs brought me around to a moment of grace, a true gift from the universe, if you will, of being introduced to a professionally guided psychedelic session that absolutely changed everything for me. It sent me on an over 4-year saga of guided psychedelic work, doing it regularly, that unwound traumas at a level that I didn't even know was possible. And it's been just an incredible journey. And that story is in the book Coming Full Circle. But Coming Full Circle is both a memoir of my experiences and what I learned, but also a guide there to help people considering doing this kind of work, of what to look for, what to expect, how it really works, and what to look for in good support to help you get the most from it.
Before we get into it, can you let the audience know what the differentiation between medicine work, exploratory journeys, and recreational use look like to you?
Sure. Most people that have done psychedelics at some point, you know, like during their teenage years or in college, they're used to a recreational use of it. And many that do a recreational use realize that there's also this spiritual component to it, or what I call expansive. And a lot of times when you go on psychedelic retreats, and a lot of what is passing today for psychedelic therapy is an expansive thing. It's where your mind is opened in a new way. And if you're new to it, it's absolutely earth-shattering. It's different, right? And within that expansive experience, you get what are called insights. You get to see your life or your experiences or your everyday perspectives from a new perspective. And that's how people shift and grow and change just in typical psychedelic use. It's powerful. I've gotten so much from it myself. But there's a deeper way to work with psychedelics that not that many are actually aware of. And some people quite a few people that offer guided services for psychedelics. They offer themselves as professionals, don't even know that this exists, and they've never gone there themselves. And that is what I call medicine work. That's where you take that big expanded mind, that ability to see things from a new perspective, but instead of having it being out and open to the universe, you take it in and you take it, you go into the cracks and crevices and the dark and scary places of your own self, of your own soul. That's where traumas live. That's where things you just can't let go of. That's where they live. That's where the aspects of yourself that you've demonized and labeled as bad and wrong live. And you have to go there if that's where you want to, if that's what you want to do to grow. So my process over these last 4 years has been going in deep again and again and again. And sometimes it's terrifying. Sometimes it's overwhelming. Sometimes it feels like it's too much, but it's never been too much for me to handle. And that's in big part to the highly qualified person, support person that I've had there guiding the session for me. And that's why it's so important to have qualified help, not just somebody that's had some big experiences and all of a sudden this is their new purpose in life, so they're going to start offering these services to people. Somebody actually deeply qualified to do it. You can handle whatever comes up. You give expression to those old pains. You give expression to those traumas, and that's how they begin to heal.
The one thing that comes to my mind is the way that you describe it is this big expanse of states being compressed. It almost sounds like the formation of a star or a black hole. We're talking about like astronomy. Can you explain without, I know I don't want to, you know, spoil a whole lot of your book because it is fantastic. By the way, I was supposed to tell you, thank you for making my wife cry. at certain parts of the book, but again, not giving things away, I physically had to sit down. It was tough. I felt tricked. I felt like I was getting this book that was handed to me, that Jake recommended to me, that about psychedelics. Now, I've read hundreds. I read everything. I listen to everything. And I was expecting one thing, and I got something completely unexpected. So I want to thank you for that, but I also want to thank you for making my wife cry.
Should we ever meet, I'll give her a big hug, okay?
And she'll love that. She's one of those caring, kind people that just is, everything in the world is just such a wonderment, and there is no reason or no other reason. Probably the main reason I really fell in love with her, because we could have an entire conversation about that. Anyway, back to the book. I don't even know where I was. So I guess my thing is like when you're talking about the healing process with medicine work, and you don't really touch on a whole lot about the expanded state. So maybe we can talk more about that instead of the healing work after this. So why don't you talk about how you've used medicine to guide your own inner experiences to maybe overcome or scar over some of the trauma that you've experienced in your life? We'll go there first.
Okay. Well, there were a few things there. So I'll jump in. So, you know, the expanded state is what most people who've done psychedelics are familiar with. That's what you get it in recreational use. You get it in, you know, this spiritual personal growth kind of use in the weekend trip kind of, or the weekend retreat kind of experience. And it's a beautiful thing. I don't talk about it a lot in the book just because anybody who's ever done psychedelics knows exactly what that is. I mean, maybe they haven't explored it to its full potential. I know I haven't. There's much more I want to do with the expanded states that are invoked by psychedelic use. But since that's what most people think of when they talk about healing with psychedelics, and especially when they're talking about healing with trauma with psychedelics, I just mention it so that I can say, that's not it. That's not what we're talking about when we're talking about healing treatment-resistant trauma with the use of psychedelics, because where one is just this big, open, expansive experience that you can't wrap your head around it unless you've done it. The other is you're open and you're expanded, but you're also descending. You're descending into your own depths. And most people, pretty much everyone, are pretty hardwired to stay out of there. It's instinctive. I've had conversations with people just as an experiment, and I'll just say, what do you think about going into your own depths, going into your own dark, scary places? And even if they can't say what that even is. Their eyes go wide and they're like, no, I don't ever want to do that. So there's an instinctive understanding that there are places within the self that we don't want to go, but it's that not going there that prevents them from healing, that prevents the growth from happening. And the fact is, those scary places are just emotional states that at some point in your life felt too overwhelming to experience. Your mind labeled them as dangerous. And so you treat them like a rattlesnake on the ground. You just don't go close to it because instinctively, if it's important not to. And the key to growth on psychedelics, the key to growth in any format, really, the key to healing deep trauma is to go up and pet the rattlesnake. You go up and you make friends with it and you realize that this isn't other than you. Yeah. This is you. And it's not a bad part of you. It's a wounded part of you. And that you, that rattlesnake shifts into a sense of a younger aspect of the self. And then you're there to parent that part. You're there to give that part love and compassion so that part can heal. And pretty soon you don't have this separate thing anymore. It dissolves into the whole of you when it's no longer held separate as fear, it's out of fear. And that's really the whole process. If you want to save yourself $21.95 on my book, that's it right there. If you want some more detail about it, you can get a book, but that's how psychedelic therapy work really works.
Well, Shannon, also I have another question. Isn't there a lot to do with your mentality prior to doing the trip? Is what is your intentions prior to trying whatever the drug may be and what you want to accomplish or what journey do you want to go down?
Well, with any psychedelic experience, whether it's recreational, whether it's expansive, or whether it's diving into medicine work professionally supervised, or even doing some deep work on your own, if you feel confident to do it, the mindset you take into it is everything. You know, if you go into a recreational experience full of anxiety and fear, you're in for a bumpy ride. It's I mean, unless you're on MDMA, if you're on mushrooms or LSD or anything like that, you're probably going to be in for a challenging day, which can be good. You got to be ready to breathe through it and ride it out and see what you can learn. And setting a clear intention for your experience, especially in doing medicine work, especially in doing healing work around trauma, is everything. It is as important, a clear intention that is unambiguous, that is connected. It's not from up here. It's not like, oh, I want to be a better person. It's, oh God, this pain I feel inside where I feel like a horrible person. I want to help this heal. And you get a physical sensation, you get a physical, a visceral connection to that part that wants to heal. That's your intention. That's where that comes from. And you take that into medicine work. And dude, if you're again and again, I've done this 4 years, almost monthly. And every single session, it follows it like a laser beam. It follows my clear intentions like a laser beam every time. And so that's why clear intentions, well set and well meant intentions, are just as important as the psychedelic. As is the integration period after. So what you take into it, how you go through the process of the medicine itself, and how you handle yourself and how you handle all the stuff that wants to come up after a medicine work journey for days and sometimes even weeks, really sets how much you get out of it.
You know, it's interesting. And yeah, I know that you talk a lot about, well, you touch on this in the book. You have an entire chapter devoted to it. But you even make the comment about you don't really have enough space to talk about it here. You want to touch on shadow work. And I think I'd be doing a disservice to all the Jungians out here. Jungians represent. Why don't we talk a little bit about shadow work?
Sure. So I only bring up Jungian shadow work in the book because a big part of healing trauma is coming back to an authentic sense of yourself. Right? Authenticity. Instead of having these negative things that you hide down inside and you're trying to avoid, instead of having these facades that you wear to show to the world so they never really know who you are or what you're about, you start letting those things go through the process of healing. You don't force them out. They're not rejected. They're not wrong. They're there to protect you. But as you heal, you don't need that protection anymore, right? And so Jung had this concept of shadow work, where the personal shadow are aspects of the self that are deemed to be unacceptable or shameful or wrong. Sometimes we all have them. You know, it comes in from our particular society about what's right, wrong, good, bad. It comes from our families and how they reflect back to us who we are. And, you know, I remember when I was a kid, I was really hyper, and I got come down on a lot about being hyper. And so that energetic, enthusiastic, playful part of me got the idea that there's something wrong with him. There's something wrong with me for this. And so over time it got stuffed down. So shadows hide in the unconscious, and masks are something that we wear to show a face to those around us that will keep us safe and acceptable. Right. And so an easy example is especially, you know, going back to like maybe the 1950s, you know, 1960s, are people's sexuality. And people who in their hearts knew that they were hardwired to be homosexual, that this is the reality, the authentic expression of them. But everything about society says this is wrong. This is shameful. This is sinful. You're going to go to hell. You could be beat up. You could be killed. And so it gets stuffed down, and they're aware of this. And sometimes, you know, they just hide it, and it doesn't fully become a shadow, but other people, it becomes shadows. And so it gets fully stuffed down, and they find themselves projecting outward the hatred that they feared feeling. They find themselves projecting it outward onto others as something wrong about them. You saw that in the evangelical. American Beauty. Yeah, that's a great example. Or the evangelicals who would, you know, fire and brimstone preach against homosexuality, and then they're caught in a bathhouse. And it's, you know, this is what happens when shadows are stuffed down that hard. They come out in passive aggressive ways. They come out in very destructive ways.
Isn't there like an aspect to, I don't know if Jung said this, but like own your demons, own it, embrace it. Don't try to hide it, in a sense.
One of the ones I talked about in the book about myself was envy. And for a very long time, it was a point of pride for me that I never felt envious. I'm like, yeah, I'm never envious about anything. I never feel it about anything at all. But I would find with some of my friends, if they had a girlfriend that I thought was really attractive, if they had something about them, usually having to do with the women that were interested in them, I would start letting out all these biting jokes, and everybody was laughing about it and everything. But it took a while to realize that that's me passive aggressively punishing them for having something that I wanted. And I had no idea that's what was happening. And once I realized that, oh my God, I'm feeling envy. Envy could come out, and it could be a normal part of my human experience, and it was no longer a shadow. And so it was, it's really powerful to do deep shadow work and to own these aspects of the self that are hidden away for whatever the reasons are. They're hidden away because the more you bring them out and into the whole of you, the more authentic and whole you become. So now I can feel envy about something, and it's fine. It's like, hey man, that's a really cool car. I can't afford that, but I'd love to have that car or whatever. You know, it's a simple example, but it's a lot more freeing than having these deep below the level of consciousness churnings of suffering and discomfort because of it. And shadow work is a small part of the book. I brought it up in the book just because it's an important thing to understand as you work towards becoming more whole. And so, it's pretty cool. Actually, I really like, I like studying shadow work.
I love how you mentioned like jealousy, because you can also get into the mindset of too, just like, especially with like women and liking a particular woman who may not like you back. It's like, what's wrong with me? Why am I not good enough? Why do I not have that in my life? What's wrong with me?
Yeah, that kind of beating yourself up is really common. And it comes from a deep insecurity of the self. And that's the kind of thing that those levels of insecurities, you know, depending on where they're coming from, but that kind of thing can be really powerfully addressed in an expansive standard kind of psychedelic experience. You go in feeling those feelings as you open up the psychedelic experience, and all of a sudden you're starting to see this thing from lots of different angles, and you understand why you feel that way and where it's coming from and how powerful it could be. And if it comes from a trauma that's even deeper yet, then you would move into medicine work. And there you would go down and you would really understand down to the roots of it, right? What the cause of this is and what's feeding it. And in what way are those thoughts actually meant to protect you? In what way are those thoughts in a misguided way trying to serve you? And when you start seeing that clearly and seeing how, okay, when I was a little kid, shutting down in this way probably helped keep me safe, but now I'm an adult and I don't need this, it starts unwinding all on its own. That's one of the beautiful things about working with psychedelics is when you bring these things out into the light of your conscious awareness, they very often just start opening up and dissipating on their own. And these things that were kept so tight down inside just start, all that energy starts coming back into the whole of you to be used in positive ways.
You know, it's interesting because you talk about the shadow, and in Jungian terms that we talk about how the shadow, once that we have become individualized, the shadow becomes the anima or the animus. And in modern Jungian thought, there's actually anima and animus within one person. I don't know how much you understand or you of this concept, but did you run into this concept of the anima slash animus when you were doing work, shadow work?
Not really. I try not to overcomplicate it with a lot of levels, with a lot of labels. And it's really about the felt sense of what I'm encountering. And I try not to over intellectualize it as I'm processing. I'm just trying to take what I find as it is and give it the opportunity to breathe in some fresh air, to let in some new light and expand and open and express and hopefully eventually release. And that's, it's all very body-centered. It's all very experiential. And being an over-intellectualizer, as soon as I get in my head, I stop any work from happening. And so I just try to let my intellect take a back seat and really let the experience of the journey and the experience of the unwinding do what it needs to do.
So that almost sounds transpersonal in a way. And I know that there are several times in the book where you touch on transpersonal psychology, especially with Stanislav Grof, with this, kind of heralded the whole idea of holotropic breathwork, and took a more somatic approach to the whole situation. So, you know, that it seems very central to the book there. And without not giving a whole lot of spoilers away, the somatic aspect is something that is not really touched on a whole lot, or I should say it's not given enough credit to. So would you like to touch on the whole somatic aspects of the psychedelic medicine work?
Yeah. So, you know, back when I first started therapy in my early 30s, when I really got into late 20s, early 30s, my therapist at the time was doing this this therapeutic modality called Hikomi, which is a type of somatic body experiencing. And it's where I first learned to start differentiating how I'm feeling from who I am. You know, because before that, being very... being a bit of a knucklehead, I just, whatever I was feeling, that's what was true. That's what was real. And there was no differentiation between that. Right. And so that's, with Hikomi, I got to start being an observer of the emotional processes in me. And I got to start learning about going, if you go in and you allow one emotional state to express itself, to release, to not resist it and let it flow through, then the next thing exposes itself. And then the next layer below that and the next layer below that. And it's really pretty much identical to what happens in true medicine work journeys. Cause one thing comes up and maybe you're resisting and you're fighting and all of a sudden you just let go. You know, a lot of times if I'm resisting, my guide will come up and start working the vagal nerves on the side of my neck to get back into the parasympathetic nervous system to get my body to relax, get me out of fight, flight, or freeze. And then all of a sudden I just feel this rush of energy move through my body, right? So that terror I was resisting, it's just energy now. And now all of a sudden there's something else exposed. Maybe it's sadness, maybe it's shame, maybe it's joy. It's hard to say, but you just go through layer after layer of allowing these emotional states to express themselves. And that's how you work your way down inwards to get to the point where you're actually addressing these traumas and allowing them to express themselves. So body-centered therapies and psychedelic medicine work go together perfectly. I mean, I even recommend in the book that somebody who's considering doing this, that they go and work with some kind of a somatic experiencing therapist, whether it's Hikomi or somatic body experiencing. There's a few out there, and I haven't found any that I dislike. But learn to be self-aware of your emotional states and how they sit in your body and how you resist them and how you learn to let them release. And then you can take that understanding and get so much more out of psychedelic medicine work, because your body automatically knows how to handle these things when it comes up, right? If you've never done anything like this, the first time fear comes up or terror comes up, you're just going into fight, flight, or freeze, right? You're just going to lock down and you're just going to keep breathing until the drugs wear off. But if you've got experience, if your body already knows that, oh, I know what this is, I know how to deal with it, it lets it flow through, and then you can just start. I call it gateways, right? So each emotional state that comes up is the gateway to get to the next, and you pass through it by allowing it to flow through you naturally.
It's the body keeps the score. I mean, the Bessel van de Kolk, I mean, speaks, and it's wonderful to see that he really has adopted or has come on to the psychedelic scene. A lot of these big topics that we like to talk about, some of the biggest names have kind of jumped on it, whether it's Bessel van der Kolk, whether it's Dick Schwartz, whether it's Gabor Mate, which, I mean, we could go on to, you know, a whole number of topics from here. But, I mean, you talk about the vagal nerve and triggering parasympathetic responses. And then that leads into the idea of ethics within this topic, which I know that you spent a great deal of time almost cynically critiquing the way that things are being held within the psychedelic space and the containers that some of these psychedelic practitioners bring to the table. And I think that is a very, very valid point that really doesn't get a whole lot talked to. I think what it comes down to is that we're, you know, news stories, all these things come out about the huge benefits of psychedelic assisted psychotherapy and the powerful uses of psilocybin or MDMA, you pick it. But no, it doesn't really get talked a whole lot about enough of the things that need to take place, the ethics that need to be put in place. I mean, at points, it almost read like the ACA's code of ethics, the way that you were talking about it. And it was like that, this is the conversation that we need to have now, because if we don't have those conversations now, it's just all going to fall apart. It's going to be a house of cards. So let's go into the ethics, the some of the suggestions that you have. Did you want to touch on any of those?
Yeah, of course. I'll talk ad nauseum about the problems I see and how psychedelic sessions are being held. So I think up front, I should just say that I have met quite a few people that have gone and tried various kinds of psychedelic healing sessions and they go once and they never go back because what they got was interesting, but they didn't see the potential, or what they got was terrifying and they had to suffer through it and they don't want to ever do that again. And both of these are caused by not having it properly facilitated. Right now there are, my fan just kicked itself on high. Is that showing up in the mic or are we okay?
No. Okay. You're good.
Making sure I'm not talking from our hurricane here.
Yeah.
So currently there's clinical trials where it's legally held psychedelic therapy sessions. And then there's the more common and more easily accessible underground practitioners that are offering this. And there are real big challenges with each. With the clinical trials, I've spoken to quite a few therapists that do it here and in Canada and in Australia. And they are so handcuffed in what they can do. And some places they can't even discuss their own experiences with psychedelics. They can't discuss it with a client. Physical contact is minimal, where physical contact during an actual journey, if it's what you're asking for and it's appropriate, you know, like a hand on the chest, touching the vagal nerves, it's a lifesaver. It's what allows the work to keep going. often they have the person in a recliner or on a sofa or in a twin bed. So they're confined and they've got on headphones so they can't move or they're going to knock those headphones loose. And they've got on eye shades, which eye shades are awesome if it feels right to you. But I've had eye shades bring up stuff so terrifying. It was, it was actually really punishing. So there, I love that there are these clinical trials and this opportunity for psychedelics to get their chance to shine, but I really want people to get the benefit from it. And most people that go to do this are trying to treat trauma. And some of them, if it's more later in life, if it's close to the surface and ready to break, then this kind of an experience would probably be really useful. But for people like me, this wouldn't have helped at all. I would have tried it and I would have just gone back to trying to work on my own, because in a medicine work session, you need room to move. You need to be on a large, safe mat. Right. You need to be in a space where you're not going to hit anything, because trauma is stored in the body and trauma is released from the body. And a lot of times, man, your arms are flailing, your legs are kicking, or you're shaking, or you're flipping over on your stomach to vomit. You're powerfully releasing in cathartic ways, and it can't be contained. And another important thing about these clinical trials is they're often in offices, and there's other offices around.
There it is.
Yeah.
And you can't be loud. You know, even if they don't tell you you can't be loud, you know other people can hear this. And so it's not safe to be loud. And even if you were, your therapist is very likely going to get tense and you're going to read that and shut down the expression. And dude, I scream my friggin' head off in sessions sometimes, or I yell and pound on pillows, and I keep a wiffle, one of those yellow wiffle bats.
The wiffle bat.
I keep it at the base of my mat where I do my work, and sometimes I grab that and just, I'm swearing at the top of my lungs, beating the shit out of a pillow, because that's what it takes to get it out. That's what it takes to get it to express, right? And if you don't have that freedom, you don't have anything when you're trying to help heal trauma with psychedelics. And another problem with some of these clinical trials is that the therapists holding the space have never done deep psychedelic work themselves.
There it is.
the debate we've always had too. It's just like, you know, if you're a therapist,
one of the points I make in the book is whether you're a standard therapist or you're somebody that works with psychedelics, you can never hold an authentic space for somebody deeper than you've gone to in yourself. It's not possible. You can sit there quietly and try to look like an expert, or some people take on the whole guru vibe, trying to be spiritually elevated. And it's just such nonsense. The guides I've worked with that are so beautiful and do such beautiful work is they just show up and they're everyday people, everyday clothes. They're not wearing scarves and nonsense that I've seen other people doing. Right. And they're just there to help. They're there and they get quiet and they get centered, and they are there to help hold space for you. And they don't tell you what's going on for you. They don't try to fix you. It's just so within the clinical therapy model, we need more therapists that have actually done the deep work. And once they've done the deep work themselves, then having a big mat to work on and having the privacy to scream and be loud and not have to be concerned, those things are just going to come as a matter of common sense because they understand why it's so important. So that's the clinical therapy model. Now, so going Shannon, underground,
I got a question. Sorry for interrupting. So a therapist like me, I've never tried it. I want to try it. So how do you recommend a therapist like me wanting to do it, knowing that they are still illegal in the United States?
Let me make sure I'm understanding your question. So you would like to an experience like this so that you understand.
Depends on where you're at, Jake.
Yeah, some people get them online.
You can go to a place like Oregon. You can also go to a place like Denver and have legal. So it really comes down to state versus federal legality.
Well, and the challenge there, Rich, is that what's being offered in Oregon. I was just having a conversation with somebody who's a big proponent is a big part of the civilian side. He's one of our LinkedIn friends, but he's deep in the civilian side of the Oregon process of getting these things legalized, and those therapists are so handcuffed that they can't offer anything that's really helpful. What they have to pay to even be able to offer those services, that what it costs to go do it, I'm told, is about $5,000 a session. which very rarely somebody with trauma can one and done get what they need. It takes time. You heal over time, right? Each time you go in, you allow yourself in a little deeper and a little deeper until you get where you need to be. And, you know, if you're Elon Musk, $5,000 a pop isn't a big deal, but I couldn't have afforded to do this at those kind of rates. I wouldn't have seen the benefits in myself that I have if money would have been the inhibiting factor.
And that is, that's also a big thing that as I was reading your book, that's a thing that I like to talk about is this whole idea that there is a lot of people with trauma, but there is not a whole lot of people that have the money to do this. And with insurance not being able to cover it yet, because it's still federally illegal. I mean, we're still talking, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 a pop for an entire regimen of preparation, the experience, not to mention the cost of the actual medicine itself, plus the integration process. And then, you know, you're talking two or three sessions, plus the support systems that you're going to need on the outside, plus this, plus that. It's not affordable, nor is it attainable to people that are strapped for cash. Not to mention the whole BIPOC component that goes into all of this.
It's all got a ways to go, and it's tough because you know when you go in to do a session, you're taking up the time of a highly trained professional all day. They don't get to see 5 or 10 clients in a day; they see one. And, you know, my own guide after sitting with me, because my sessions regularly go 8, 9, 10 hours. Oh, right. I mean, she's not going to be doing anything else that day or the next, because if you're there for real, if you're sitting for someone for real, you're in an energetic co-regulated experience with them, an emotional co-regulated experience with them. And you're tuckered out by the end of it. And so, you know, that's part of the reason it's expensive. There are organizations that are coming up, and I've been having conversations with early conversations with one of them that are looking for ways to raise money for people who can't afford it. But the whole thing has a long ways to go. But, you know, looking at the sanctioned clinical trials, you know, and the limitations they have and how handcuffed the therapists are and how expensive they can be to do. The other option, the other glove is the underground, which is where this has normally been done. And within the underground, there are some beautifully talented, deeply compassionate people that work for far less money just because they want to be of service to help people to heal. But there are also a massive wave of well-intentioned, deeply misguided, radically unqualified people starting to offer guide services because they think what you do is you give somebody some drugs, you put on some eye shades, you turn on some spiritual music, you sit there trying to look like Gandhi, and this person goes through their process, and that's what it is, and that's not what it is. That's not even close to what it is. I go on and on about it in the book because I really want people to understand if you go to an underground source, which there are some really good ones, you need to be able to tell the difference between somebody who's got a great deal of confidence in their skills just because they don't know any better and somebody who's actually deeply skilled. And that's one of the more important messages I brought part in the book is like, you were asking, where could you go? If you wanted to do it for real, you would have to do it underground.
What do you think is the safest way, Shannon, to do that? Like word of mouth, like, you know, somebody who said they had a great experience and word of mouth travels.
Yeah. I have met every guide I've worked with through networking. Okay. So I just put it out there. Hey, I'm looking for this. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing I'm looking for. And, you know, I have this strange ability to manifest things in my life that I just can't really explain. I can actually tell you what it goes back to. Back when I was 16, somebody introduced me to the book Illusions by Richard Bach. And in it, there's the story of you take what you want and you put it in a bottle and you chuck it in the ocean and you watch it go over the horizon and then you watch it manifest in your life, right? And I took that deeply to heart. And anytime I get out of my own way, I tend to manifest what I need. I'm not a woo-woo person, but there's something to this and I don't understand it, but it works. And so I was working with a guy that lives 8 hours from me and I would drive up there and back to do my sessions once a month or so. And when it was time for me to leave that guide because he couldn't hold what I was expressing anymore, I put out there, I want a guide that's close to me, that is absolutely qualified to work with trauma, that has done their own deep work, so I know they can hold whatever comes up from me without having a reaction. And I've got somebody that lives, you know, less than an hour from me. Mm-hmm. And they come to my home where I built out my own rooms that I call it, that somebody called my launch pad. And so I've got my own launch pad and we do work right here at my home. And we do that about once a month and it's great. It's about networking. And, mm-hmm. you know, you obviously know people in the field. And so you start asking questions and you can get introduced to people. That's how you find your way to doing quality work.
There's the stark divide. There's almost like a chasm that separates the world of, you know, above ground psychedelic assisted psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. I know you made a couple distinctions in the book, which was very helpful. Explanation to the different levels of, say, guides or this, that, and other thing. Again, try not to spoil things. If I could wave a magic wand and give you the opportunity to synergize the above ground and then the underground. How would you make that happen?
Well, I mean, if I could voice a wish, I would wish that the above ground sources were run by people who've actually done the work themselves. Yeah. They understand what's required and the kind of support a client needs. The preparation, the actual experience, and the integration process afterwards would all be one smooth process, not disjointed among different therapists and different, you know, having to hop around to different things. I've heard talk of people wanting to set up integration retreat type centers. So you go through and you do your process and then you can stay here for a few days or a few weeks and really integrate the process, because the faster you go back to your life, kind of the sooner you start readopting the old ways of being, the longer you can keep the new stuff open, the more integrated it gets to be. That would be my biggest wish, is that how trauma treatment with psychedelics really works could be integrated into the models of the clinical trials, but eventually the actual way that these things are being presented and held for people that come in. So, you know, you go in and you're in a big comfortable room and it's triple walled. So and you could set off a grenade in there and somebody on the outside isn't going to hear it. So the client knows that no matter what they express, nobody else is going to hear this or be bothered by it or triggered by it. And so you feel safe. You feel very comfortable. You've had a chance to really connect with your guide. So you have a relationship and trust established. You've got a big safe mat on the floor so you can yell and scream and kick and move and do whatever it is you need to do, or lie there quietly, whatever it is that's real for you, whatever it is that's an authentic expression for you. You're able to lie, you're able to have that experience. And then you're able to stay there as long as you need to recover before you're kicked out the door. You know, if you need to lay there for a few hours and take a nap before you leave, you're allowed to, right? So, and then you can move smoothly from that into whatever your integration process is going to look like. That's everything. That's what it needs to be. And then from there, you know, as therapists are having their own deep experiences and they're working with more and more clients and learning about it, this will just keep continuing to grow in a realistic way that gets deeper and deeper and more helpful. But coming at it from the old school idea of, we're going to treat this like a traditional therapeutic model, and I can't touch you. I can hold your hand, but I can't touch you. And I can't talk about my own experiences, and we can't have a personal connection so that you can feel real trust for me. It just limits everything.
I again want to thank all my listeners for listening to part one, Healing Trauma with Psychedelics, and a special thanks to Shannon and Richard for being awesome special guests. And please stay tuned for part two, Healing Trauma with Psychedelics, which will be airing next week. And lastly, I just want to inform all my listeners that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. All right, everyone. Thank you and have a good day. Bye. And lastly, I just want to inform all my listeners that the information expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed medical doctor or a licensed mental health therapist. All right, everyone. Thank you and have a good day. Bye.